Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. Today is the day you have made. I will rejoice and be glad in it. And I won't worry about tomorrow. I'm trusting in what you say. Today is the day. Good morning, everyone, and welcome to Faith Radio Mornings for the 7th of January. I hope you had a very good weekend. I hope it was relaxing. I hope it was a good Sabbath for you yesterday as well, as we rest and reorient and fix our eyes yet again on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. And if you're getting up this morning, getting off to work, getting your kids back to school, I think we're going to see a lot more buses on the road today as the holidays have officially ended for most of us. I appreciate that you're joining us as we get together each morning like this and talk about the news headlines of the day from the perspective of faith and of hope. I'm your host for the show, Dr. Peter Kapsner, always delighted to be joined in studio by Rachel Sutton and Paul Perreault, who help produce the show and bring a number of guests in with us each week to help us think through so many of the topics of the day. And in just a moment, one of our favorites, Brandon Showalter of the Christian Post, is going to be joining us. And Brandon and I are going to talk about some of the recent developments in the transgender movement and some really troubling things related to the fact that there is a lot of puberty suppression going on now. There's a lot of change of people's just their very physiology in terms of their gender. And Brandon does a great job of covering those kinds of topics for the Christian Post. So he'll join us here in just a minute to kick things off on a Monday morning. But before getting to Brandon, I was very compelled last Friday by a theologian that one of our friends, Gary Stratton, referenced, and that's Jürgen Moltmann. He's a German theologian that writes a lot about the perspective of hope. And it's one of those things we try to communicate each morning on Faith Radio Mornings, is the idea that there really is hope in the world, that it is difficult sometimes to walk out our days and walk out our weeks and our months, but we do walk it out from the perspective of an empty tomb, that even though we die, yet we shall live, and there's always hope and always future. And Jürgen Moltmann wrote this about hope in his book, The Source of Life, The Holy Spirit and the Theology of Life. It's a little longer quote, but I'll start out our Monday morning with this quote, and then we'll take a break and invite Brandon into the show. But Moltmann writes this: "The ultimate reason for our hope is not to be found at all in what we want or wish for or wait for. The ultimate reason is that we are wanted and wished for and waited for. What is it that awaits us? Does anything await us at all, or are we alone? Whenever we base our hope or trust in the divine mystery, we do feel deep down in our hearts there is someone who is waiting for us, who is hoping for us, and who believes in us. For we are waited for as the prodigal son in the parable is waited for by his father. We are accepted and we are received as a mother takes her child into her arms and comforts him or her. God is our last hope because we are God's first love." And with that, regardless of what's coming today in the headlines, regardless of what's coming today in our lives, we do live in the perspective of hope. And I know Brandon Showalter shares that same faith journey, and he'll be joining me next on Faith Radio Mornings. Gee, Brandon, I don't know. Sometimes I forget whose walk-up music is whose, and then I remember at the last second that we rolled out a bit of Pavarotti for you in terms of your ability to sing opera, and it just cracks me up as much in 2019 as it does in 2018. I think it's one of my favorite things that I know somebody personally who can sing opera. It's the best, Brandon.
Well, thank you very much. Just as fun this year as it is last year.
So do you spend some time sort of, you know, in the morning when you wake up in your devotions and you sort of sing through the scriptures? Is that how you roll?
Well, I got to get warmed up first. Can't just belt it out first thing in the morning. That would be hurting the vocal box. Can't do that.
Yeah, I
like to sing through the scriptures at times.
I love it. That's great. Well, thanks for joining us. You do such a great job here with us on Faith Radio Mornings with so many of the headlines of the day. And I know you write for the Christian Post. We certainly recommend to our readers that if they want to go find some news from a really
experienced as well as insightful perspective, ChristianPost.com is the place to go with you and your colleagues. And Brandon, you spend a lot of time writing about matters of sexuality. And of course, I would imagine the plate and the possibilities is always full these days in terms of what you can cover.
Well, yes, and I'll tell you, one of my beats here at CP, and I never could have imagined this when I started 2 years ago, that particularly gender ideology is one of the things where it's always in the news. Laws are changing with breakneck speed. This ideology is, you know, there's always news about it. And so it's, you know, some people may think, well, why are you guys so obsessed with it? It's like, well, because there are huge implications. There are laws that are changing. This has profound meaning for everyone. It's not just a few people, but this latest piece that I've written, as you indicated in the lead-in, was by far the most troubling one I've written to date. And it is hard to write on these issues sometimes, and it can be exhausting, but we have to keep our eyes open and be watchful.
Yeah, talk us through a bit, Brandon, about what you covered on this part of it as we continue to see the flow of transgenderism develop into more of the mainstream. And when that happens, some of the implications we have to begin to deal with when we have a certain ideology or conviction, whatever our convictions are that are true about life, end up playing themselves out in life. And so this is some of the logical results of a conviction that we can kind of choose our genders, or that gender is very fluid and can kind of go back and forth for people. So tell our listeners what you're covering in this article.
Well, this was a disturbing piece, a 4,000-word feature, and I would encourage all of your listeners to go and check it out at ChristianPost.com. It's still there. And this is a drug called Lupron. For those of you who don't know what Lupron is, it is a drug that is used to suppress testosterone. It's a hormone blocker. It's used to treat prostate cancer, sometimes used to treat sex offenders. This is now being injected into children, minor children, prepubescent children that are confused about their bodies. They're gender-confused kids. It has never been FDA approved or been any for that purpose. It's been approved for precocious puberty, which is a medical condition. But it has never been green-lighted by the FDA for gender dysphoria. There's never been any long-term study on the side effects of this drug for children. And what this drug does is block, it suppresses the normal pubertal signals that happen in the brain and in the body. It takes calcium out of the bones of girls. The horror stories of what this drug does even to prostate cancer patients, the side effects are so horrific. It's unimaginable what it does into the body of a child. But it essentially puts them on the pathway to permanent sterilization. I'll tell you, Peter, I have gotten feedback on this article from people who are atheists, who are lesbians, who are Christians, who are Jewish, who are fans of the political spectrum, right-wing, left-wing, right in the middle. They're all saying things to me. I have no words to contain my horror. This is like the Nazi experimentation practices on humans, on the Jews. This is eugenics. People don't realize that this is happening in what are now, I believe, up to 55 transgender clinics and children's hospitals all throughout the United States. This is truly diabolical, what's going on. And in the article, I interview three endocrinologists who have not drunk the gender ideology Kool-Aid, who are trying to speak out and say, please, people, wake up. This is what's going on, and we need to put a stop to this. It sounds so outlandish, but it actually is happening, and we need to take a closer look here.
Well, and Brandon, I think it's such an interesting question for me when you begin to talk in the way that you do about these things and raising the red flag and the alarm. And I've referenced it several times in the show that this is not something that conservative Christians are just raising the flag about. But I was reading Camille Paglia, who is a lesbian scholar out of the East Coast, as well as the leading sex reassignment surgeon out of Russia. They're all saying that this is something that is abusive of our children, that we have to stop doing what we're doing. But what is it these days in our country and our culture, Brandon, that it doesn't seem like raising the red flag really gets anywhere? Are we just weary? Are we tired of the rhetoric? Are there so many voices coming through our phones these days that it's hard to even discern what's important? I'm just curious your thoughts on why these things don't seem to get the traction they really should, given the seriousness of the situation.
Boy, that's a great question, and you're absolutely correct that Camille Paglia and others. I mean, this, I've been corresponding with several radical feminists and lesbian and gay friends that I know who are absolutely horrified by what's going on. And to answer your question, I think that I do run into this. People just feel exhausted and tired, and they're so used to the crazy. It's just yet another thing. I would imagine that, yes, it is. So many messages coming through our phones, and there are a lot of things that contribute to it. But we are living in an age of mass delusion. And one of the greatest lies that I come up against when I do try to talk about this with people is that, no, you are not powerless. Don't just wring your hands. You can do something about this. If this does bother you, if this really is, in your estimation, Nazi experimentation, and that is an analogy that I think is absolutely fair in this case, because since when are we just sterilizing perfectly healthy children that, I mean, Peter, the only time I think that children should be given these kinds of high-powered drugs that have the potential to sterilize them and do is if they have cancer or some kind of really ravenous medical condition where you need some kind of high-powered chemo to get rid of that thing. But I wish I did know as to why people aren't feeling like they can protest this or work to end this because they feel overwhelmed. I don't know. It really baffles me, but this is one of the things where, as pleasant as it may be to just stick your head in the sand and pretend it's not happening, we can't do that because our children are being sterilized. I mean, I just want to drive that home. Their bodies are being experimented on in service to an incoherent ideology. We have to have compassion, as I've said many times when we've discussed these issues on the show here. That does not mean that we allow this to continue to go on. We've got to raise the alarm.
It's Brandon Scholes here with the Christian Post. And Brandon, we'll take a short break. But when we come back, I'd love to reflect a little bit on some of what you are suggesting here, just in terms of it is possible to do something. And it's mindful of a passage in Ephesians 5 where it says that once you were in darkness, but now you are in the light of the Lord. Live as children of light. Have nothing to do with the fruitless deeds of darkness, but rather expose them. Exposing everything in the light becomes visible, and everything is illuminated by that light. And so wake up, O sleeper, and rise from the dead. Be very careful then how you live, not as unwise, but as wise. And when we come back, Brandon, I would love to get your take on even some things we can do as believers, not to become alarmist or narrow-minded or anything like that, but to really bring hope and wholeness into the situation. So more with Brandon Showalter next from the Christian Post on Faith Radio Mornings. Welcome back to Faith Radio Mornings at about 20 minutes past the hour here on the 7th of January, and we are chatting with Brandon Showalter, the Christian Post, that does such a great job covering a variety of topics, included among them the difficult topics of transgenderism and just sort of the gender fluidity that's happening in our country. And Brandon, appreciate just the way you dive into these very difficult issues and be a leading voice on some of these topics. And I'm curious, in terms of thinking through, so what are some ways we can begin to engage the conversation, not just be disturbed by it? I think many of us are. But how can we begin? Again, raise the alarm is a little concerning to me because I think Christians have been given a very bad rap for picketing and yelling really, you know, horrible things at other people. But how can we begin to raise the alarm in a different kind of way?
Well, I hear you, and while that reputation certainly may be there in some cases, and we definitely want to, you know, be about, you know, what we're for, not what we're against. At the same time, we have to speak with clarity on this. Uh-huh. I would say one of the things that I think might break the ice is when you try to talk to people about it is lead with your own story. And, you know, everybody's got issues and everybody has brokenness in their life. We have struggles. And I think if we can be the ones that can be the first people to let our own guards down, it really paves the way for greater conversations about these tough topics. I've, you know, prayed with people who've dealt with gender confusion. It's a very real and torturous thing. And, you know, wouldn't wish it on anybody. I'm sure the suffering is great, but, you know, so I'd say to your question, just be the first one to let your guard down. Be the one to be transparent and vulnerable and, you know, share from the heart, and let that be the springboard from which you start to talk about why we believe as we do, particularly on these sensitive issues. And so I say keep that intention with the very real atrocities that are going on. I mean, I know I don't have to tell you, Peter, or any of your listeners, but it's wrong that children are being sterilized. It's wrong that they're being told lies about the human body. It's really wrong that what's going on in our culture is the advance of an ideology that is literally at war with the human body. And transgender ideology is wrong because it makes war on what God has made. It's once we realize that this is a war against the human frame, it's a war against the body, we can't give any quarter to it. And so while our witness may be compromised in some ways due to past clumsiness and how some Christians have represented us in ways that maybe haven't been so helpful, I would agree with that, we still can't not speak. This is so important. This is too important not to say anything, even if it's just in one-to-one conversation, even if it's just posting a few articles on Facebook with a few comments. Do something.
Yeah, it's such an important point, Brandon. And I know in the classes that I've been teaching on sexuality over the last 10 years, that if the idea here was that we're finally getting it right, that people's gender can be sort of chosen or there's a fluidity of it, and we enter into that and engage with that, that people should feel at peace and there should be hopefulness, I'm seeing more and more confusion and anxiety and depression among my young people than I've ever seen before compared to 10 years ago. And so when you judge things by their fruit, that's part of the deal here, right, is we can have these interior convictions. Well, it's true that gender is on a spectrum and there's no such thing as true male and female, but when we play that self out over years and see the fruit of that and see that it's leading nowhere good for so many, that's part of what we have to say. We better engage in this and try to stand in the gap a bit.
Well, and you know what? And this is, I have to tip my hat to some of my feminist friends for their insights here. One of the things that I would like to see done in within churches especially is the breakdown of really old, rigid gender stereotypes. My feminist friend pointed out, I said, look, it is physically impossible to change your biological sex. You know, sex is stamped on every cell in our bodies. It is encoded in our DNA. We are embodied persons. That is the only way to exist. Gender, in so many ways, you talk about all these things. I know so many people, and men and women alike, who have been really damaged by these really rigidly expressed gender roles. And I think as Christians, while, yes, we can recognize the beauty of male and female, God has made us in his image, and we're male and female, I think it's time that we really start pushing the envelope and having these difficult conversations. And it's happening in some places, I know, about why we believe that certain gender roles need to be as they are. We want to follow the biblical model as we see it, but I think some of these things have been as a result of culture, and you know, you look back at the history of the United States where gender roles really changed with the Industrial Revolution, and as the economy continued to transform, these things just kind of stayed with us. And there's deeper conversations that need to be had, I think, within churches about why we do believe some of the things we do believe about gender. But yes, you're right. There has never been a more confusing time. But we need to tell, I think we need to tell girls who like to, you know, get under the hood of a car and, you know, fix the motor, that's fine. And a boy who has a good eye for color and he likes to do interior design, that's also fine. He can be a man, she can be a woman that is just as womanly and just as manly and have their interests be like those. And that's perfectly fine. It does not mean that they were somehow born in the wrong body, as it's said these days. I mean, that's just a terrible, terrible lie. And unless we sort of work hard to break down a lot of these gender stereotypes, people are going to believe it and do catastrophic damage to their selves, and only more confusion is going to happen. So that's another thing where I could say we could do.
Yeah, I love that, Brandon. It's such an important point because I think some of the rise of transgenderism is the resistance or backlash to the idea that if you are male, you must be doing this in life, and if you're female, you must be doing this in life, as if gender and roles are completely intertwined, and there is, really isn't any escape from that. But there really is a masculinity and femininity independent of the roles that we play in life.
For sure, for sure. I mean, I think the conflation of sex with gender has been very damaging. We need to be able to allow people to enjoy what they like, do what they like, you know, and somehow it's not allow them. I just can't underscore this enough. It's impossible to be born in the wrong body. You get the body that you get, and teach people to love their bodies. We are in a culture, we've referenced social media and through the phones already this morning, but there are so many messages that are sent, especially to young people, that somehow their bodies are bad or that they need to change their body in order to fix something in their mind. It's a lie, it's a lie, it's a lie. We need to combat this thing with as much gusto as we can muster. And I'll just leave it there.
Well, I so appreciate the balance that you bring to this, the convictions that you bring to it, Brandon. Again, if you're listening this morning, go to ChristianPost.com and you can see Brandon's article about transgenderism and some of the recent developments of that. And Brandon, pretty heavy topic this morning. So before we go, just want to change briefly here. Are you warmed up enough yet? Is the diaphragm completely loosened up that you can give us a little opera before we go?
I'm sorry, not at 7:30 in the morning. I love you, Peter, but I will not be pleasing your listeners if I try to felt it out right now.
Awesome. I'll FaceTime you later. I expect something
sorry
really good out of you.
Sorry to turn you down, but we'll do it one day.
Have a great week, Brandon. Thanks for joining us here.
Thank you, Peter. Appreciate it as always.
We'll head over to Lighten Up for a little bit more sort of fun with Ken Davis this morning and some bottom of the hour news. And when we come back for the second half of this hour, Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News will be joining us, and we'll talk about some of the experience of Christians in Egypt right now and the crackdown that's happening there. Well, thinking about our friends in Fargo, now listening on our new FM frequency at 102.5. Welcome to Faith Radio Mornings on the FM side of it in Fargo. And great news out of North Dakota. For the seventh time in eight seasons, the North Dakota State Bison are the FCS National Football Champions. They beat Eastern Washington 38-24 in Texas to bring home another title. We're thinking here down in Minneapolis that we might trade our 53 Minnesota Vikings for your entire North Dakota State Bison. Last Friday on Faith Radio Mornings, we were joined by Chris Martin, who's an author and a pastor. He does such great work with the millennial generation. And he was explaining the positives and negatives of the game Fortnite.
Spending time socializing with people, no matter what the platform is, I would argue a constructive thing. It's probably better that a child is playing Fortnite for a couple of hours after dinner with his friends than just sitting and playing a video game by himself. He's socializing with people. He's building social skills. He's learning how to communicate. I mean, Fortnite is an incredibly difficult game. I play a lot of video games myself, relatively for a 28-year-old man, and the learning curve on Fortnite is incredibly steep. Most people of the 200 million people playing haven't even won. They just like to play with friends. And so I think there's an incredible amount of communication that's involved, and that's building that is a good skill. I think there are a number of positives. Learning to work together, learning to communicate, and actually socializing with people is a more constructive way for a student, a child, middle schooler, high schooler, to be spending his or her time than just sitting playing a video game by themselves or other ways they could be spending their time that may just not be as constructive.
Chris was emailing me after the show with his username and inviting me to drop into some sort of virtual Fortnite scene with him. So we'll see if this dog can learn some new tricks sometime in the next couple of weeks and give some feedbacks and report about what Fortnite is around. If you want to catch his entire segment last Friday, it was so great and helpful, I think, for us as parents and grandparents that are seeing our kids play so much of Fortnite. You can go to myfaithradio.com and hear all of what Chris had to say. Well, up next, and we've already been chatting with her, it's Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News, and we're going to cover a little bit about the persecution going on of Coptic Christians in Egypt, as well as some of these travel cautions that the United States is suggesting if we're going to interact with China over the next couple of months.
When I mentioned debt at a pastor's conference, that is our national debt, I was accused of being too political. I argue no, our national debt is a biblical issue. This is Jim Garlow. If I run up a high debt, personally, someone is going to have to pay for what I've done. If it's the national debt, the next generation has to pay. There's an incredible apathy among people since the consequences seem to be far off, and after all, it doesn't affect me today in the here and now. Pastors need to instill a sense of urgency about the issue and a strong sense of morality to go against the tide of entitlement thinking of, I want it and I want it now. On the positive side, paying one's debt is biblical. So does our government? Do you have any intention of paying off your obligations? Proverbs 37:21 reminds us, the wicked borrow and do not repay. Be well versed at jimgarlow.com.
To boldly go where no one has gone before.
And that, of course, is the intro of our Trekkie fan and Mission News Network correspondent, Ruth Kramer, who joins us regularly here on Faith Radio Mornings to talk about different experiences Christians are having around the world and often in some troubling ways. Good morning, Ruth.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. Did you have a good New Year? Any resolutions you want to regale with us with as we start the show?
Nothing that I want to regale you with. I think I was just trying to recover from Urbana.
Yeah, so tell us a little bit, just I know that we were talking off air with some of the people here on staff at Faith Radio about Urbana, and it's such an important conference for so many. What was the experience like for you there?
Well, as it always is with a conference that big that you're actually trying to cover, it's kind of overwhelming. We took a full team, which included two college students, so that we could get some perspective from them about what they were seeing and interacting with. But I think what was interesting is, as it always is, Urbana is North America's largest student missions conference. And so it's a little bit of a surprise to see how many people are openly saying, I am for the first time giving my heart to Christ, which is an exciting thing to see happen. But you kind of assume that everybody who's at a missions conference has already taken that step. So there's some of that happening. Bible study involving revelation and really being a faithful witness and encouraging this generation that to move forward and always keep your eyes on Christ. The attendance wasn't what they have had in the past, and so there's still kind of a question mark about that as to you know, what this generation is looking at. You know, are they not conference goers? Is it a cost issue, or is it something else that we still need to kind of look into? And InterVarsity is always at the leading edge of figuring out, you know, how a young generation is responding to the things in the things in their society and their community, and what their unique gifts are, so that they can help them develop those gifts. That was just kind of everything in a nutshell. And of course, when you're doing something like that, you come home and you're like, I don't know what day it is. I barely know what year it is anymore.
Well, and certainly as we engage in those kinds of conferences, and I know that the way that people consume media and enter into information and conferences like that is really changing in terms of live streaming and, again, the way they access it. But there's something about participating in those experiences, I think, Ruth, that as we sort of maybe lose hope that things are just there, you know, getting worse and worse and worse. But when we look back through history, there's always another generation of people that continue to follow Jesus in this world. And this is one of those environments where we see that take place.
Absolutely. You know, when you get to talk to some of these attendees and realizing that these are college kids that are going to be the next gen leaders, there's a lot of encouragement about the good heads that they have on their shoulders and where God is moving in that generation. One of the other things that I thought was interesting was how people responded to the arts. There was a whole section for the creatives, and there was a young man who started his has been heavily influenced, I should say, by graffiti, and he was actually the one who was tasked to create the images for a new evangelistic approach that involves pictures. And it's just it's really kind of an interesting thing. It's kind of like the book without words. But this one has a very this series has a very unique set of pictures that allow people to kind of just ask questions. What do you think about this picture? What does this say to you? And then it goes from there into just having a conversation, moving into a faith conversation.
Well, and certainly for those of us that grew up within maybe more of the barren walls of an evangelical mainstream kind of church, it's an interesting pendulum swing back to see the people of the next generation are engaging more with art. And that's something that we've seen around the world. I'm sure in your travels, you see so many of the old cathedrals and so many places in which art and representations like that are so part and parcel to people's faith.
Yeah, and so I think just learning how to approach a generation with let me just talk to you about something. Have you considered blah, 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 blah? What is interesting to me, too, though, is that this generation is probably the least aware of what Urbana is, because the number, you know, again, that's one of the things that was postulated as a reason for the attendance being a little bit down this year, was that, you know, the kids that they want to talk to, the kids that would be interested in missions coming to a missions conference, are just unaware of Urbana at all. Some of them think InterVarsity and Crew are the same organization. So, you know, it's just going to be a whole new messaging of people, that are kind of untapped right now.
It's Ruth Kramer of Mission Network News joins us regularly here on Faith Radio Mornings to talk about some of the experiences of Christians around our world. And Ruth, as we change the topic now to some of what's happening out of Egypt, we're seeing an increasing crackdown of the Coptic Christians in Egypt. So give us, our listeners a sense of what's happening there.
Well, let me just kind of start with saying that this is their Coptic Christmas. The Orthodox Church in Egypt celebrates on a different calendar. So last night they were having a celebrating Christmas Mass. Today they're having the Christmas services. The president of Egypt was actually with the Coptic Pope celebrating Christmas Eve Mass overnight as they were inaugurating the largest cathedral, I think, in the Middle East right now. It's a Coptic cathedral, and it's going to be sort of a hub of administration here. Basically, it was his way of standing in solidarity with the Coptic Church because of everything that's happening, because this is a people group, about 10% of Egypt's population, who are being targeted by extremists and just really facing a lot of pressure from an organization of people who just want to wipe them out entirely. And the president is saying, no, because we are one. We are different people in the community, and we are one. And I think that was interesting. I mean, the president being in Christmas Mass is not an unusual thing, but this has just been kind of significant because of everyone remembering what the bombing was in Alexandria, and also because on Saturday you had a bomb that was found at a church in the eastern edge of Cairo. And it did go off. The policeman who was trying to defuse it was killed. So this was something that was very, very front and center for the Coptics who were going to church on Sunday, who were going to church on Christmas Day today, and just realizing that even as recently as 72 hours ago, someone gave up their life in trying to keep them safe and realizing what kind of an enemy they have. So that's kind of all that's in front of the believers in Egypt. And other subtle changes have been happening where you've seen situations like prayer booths for Muslims showing up in public places or in public transit, like on planes and in subways. In some situations, there's been a moment taken where the driver or the pilot has read some verses from the Quran before they take off. And that never used to be a thing, but the Christians are picking up on that, and it's making them feel a little uncertain about what's happening, especially when you add the violence in on that. And then they're saying, well, El-Sisi is good for us because he's standing with us. He's making a public show of supporting the freedoms of Christians to be able to practice their faith in Egypt. But who's after that? What's going to come next? Because you're having an election in the not too distant future, and El-Sisi might not win. He might not be able to do anything else to protect the communities. So the Christians in Egypt are just saying, please be praying. As these things are happening, as the violence continues, even as recently as Saturday, that they would be bold in their faith. The person that we spoke to for the story that we did air was very, very nervous about talking about her experiences as being a woman and a Christian in Egypt right now. And that is something that you can feel just sort of permeating the body of Christ there. So pray boldness for them.
Yeah, it's such an important update, and I think it's representative and evident, Ruth, of not just some of the political kind of nationalism that's happening around our world, but we're seeing sort of this religious nationalism, per se, in which people are turning really more hard line in their religious experiences, and that's playing itself out in some political systems.
Absolutely. We're seeing that over and over. In fact, one of the things that we're kind of noting is that when governments try to take steps to protect the minorities, it often gets interpreted in a different way, and it turns into a weapon against the religious minorities. In this case, throughout the Middle East and North Africa, that's Christians.
Ruth Kramer of Mission Network News. We'll take a short break, Ruth, and when we come back, I'd love to change the topic over to China a bit, because there's been some warnings that have been issued for people that might be traveling with China, especially given the fact that there was sort of this detention of a person in the business world with that. And I know there's a lot of business flow between our two countries, but there is some concern about travel. So I want to get your perspective on that next on Faith Radio Mornings. About 8.5 minutes before the top of the hour, we're chatting with Ruth Kramer of Mission Network News. And Ruth, give us a quick update on some of the travel warnings issued from China. Maybe it doesn't sound like it's as significant, at least in your channels, as what the news media is making it out to be.
Well, yeah. The State Department actually updated its level 2 travel warning for China on January 3rd. And we started seeing the articles come out. Of course, we got concerned because there's a lot of people doing mission trips to China. You've got Bibles for China. You've got China Partner. You've got Open Doors, Voice of the Martyrs. And there's so many ministries that have mission trips going in and out of China from the United States that this could have a serious impact, we thought. So we sent this the update to a number of our partners, asking them, you know, how are you going to address this? Had you heard about this? Is there a specific thing that they're looking for when they're trying to prevent Americans from leaving China's property or soil? And pretty much across the board with our partners that we did contact, they said it's not going to affect them because they're just urging increased caution while traveling. China has been known to use the exit bans to prevent U.S. citizens from leaving the country, but sometimes that's because there's a question mark about something that has occurred within the country's borders. One of those things was involving a businessman who had a lot of cash, and there was a question mark about the transaction and why he was carrying cash and a few other things that were connected to the case. And the authorities weren't satisfied with the answers, so there was a prevention. You know, there was an exit ban that was placed on the businessman. As it stands right now, level 2, there are 4 levels of the State Department travel warnings. Level 2 is sort of a yellow, just use increased caution. And the big question that we're just kind of putting out there from one of the ministries that we talked to is if China is considered at the same level in the State Department system as the United Kingdom and France, how serious is this travel warning really? I mean, they're kind of on the same level as Germany, Denmark, Antarctica, Belgium. So you're talking a number of different countries that we are already, you know, we are already friendly with. We know them, and they're at level 2 advisories. So just kind of take that with a grain of salt. Don't let it, you know, stop you if you were going on a mission trip to China or if you were considering something. Just listen to what the ministry partners are saying and follow the rules. If you follow the rules, there shouldn't be an issue with you getting out of the country.
That's very helpful to get some ground level news about that. And Ruth, we have a couple minutes left. I want to at least get into the Pakistan issue that you sent our direction a bit too. I was unaware of it, but it sounds like it's one of these situations again where there might be rules or laws put into place, but people who have lesser means or people that just don't have the financial wherewithal can't actually meet those demands, and it leads to a very serious situation.
Right. So this actually stems from something we were talking about in the last segment, which is when a government puts rules into place to try to protect a minority group because of a situation that could turn into something that is used against that minority group. In this case, the government of Punjab issued a statement that's supposed to be a security statement. So they're just saying churches that don't meet the government's security standards risk forced closure as of March 31st. And so that doesn't sound bad because this was actually done to protect the Christians in the wake of the 2017 Christmas bombing of a church in Balochistan. And so the government just said, you got to have more of the security issues. Here is the list of things that you need to have. So you got to have cameras, you have to have metal detectors, you have to have other guards and things like that. But a lot of the congregations in Pakistan are made up of like third class citizens, people who are already discriminated against, who are poor because of their minority status, and they can't afford the equipment. So really what we're looking at now is a number of small churches who won't be able to meet those standards and will be forced to close. Now, our partner, FMI, is already saying that some of their ministry partners on the ground, some of the churches that they've been working with, are eligible, I should say, for some special funding through FMI for the Security Enhancement and Crisis Response. And so they should be able to meet the government standards because they are going to get some money and some help to put together their response to this memo. More than a dozen churches, though, that are partnered with FMI, they're supposed to fortify throughout 2019, but they're not sure if they're going to be able to do it in time. The plan was to do it this year. They're not sure if they're going to be able to do it in time. They're concerned that the government will close those smaller churches.
Well, it's great stuff as always, Ruth. We really appreciate the insider perspective. Again, if you're listening this morning, you can go to Mission Network News Online, MMN Online, and see all of what Ruth covers and on a weekly and even daily basis for events around the world. So happy New Year, Ruth, and thanks again for joining us here on Faith Radio Mornings.
Thanks for having me.
We'll wrap up our first hour show here in just a moment and preview what's coming up hour two on Faith Radio Mornings. Thanks for listening to Hour 1 on Faith Radio Mornings. It was an enjoyable hour to have Ruth Kramer from Mission Network News and Brandon Showalter from the Christian Post as well. It's just so helpful thinking about so many of these different topics from a Christian perspective, and appreciate their insight. They really are working with people that are in these issues that are just top of the mind for so many of us. Looking forward to Hour 2 as well. We'll be joined first by Dr. Linda Mintel, who has a program on the Faith Radio Network, and we're going to be talking a little bit about dealing with loss in our lives, especially from the holidays when we've probably, many of us, were just the loss that we've had in life has been exposed and the difficulty of that for the people that are no longer with us. So Linda Mintel will do a great job at the first part of the hour. And, of course, Dr. David Aikman, one of our favorites, will join us in the second half of Hour 2 to talk about some of the headlines from a global standpoint. So stay tuned. More to come on Faith Radio Mornings.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.